Hello, and welcome to the Patterson Dental Podcast, a podcast where we discuss current events in the dental industry, highlight Patterson Dental priorities, and share insights on how to help our valued customers. My name is Leslie Ricken, Sales Training Manager here at Patterson Dental and host for the Patterson Dental Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This episode features a strategic accounts takeover with guest host Stacy Papp. Her featured guest today is Mr. Bill Newman, CEO of Group Dentistry Now. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Patterson Dental Podcast. My name is Stacy Papp, and I am the brand and segment manager here at Patterson. And today I'm so excited to welcome Bill Newman, the CEO of Group Dentistry Now. Founded in 2014, Group Dentistry Now is a multimedia company dedicated to providing relevant news, podcasts, education, products, services, and consulting to DSOs, group practices, and industry partners. As I mentioned, Bill serves as a CEO and consultant to several DSO organizations of various sizes, equipping them with credible industry-backed research and helping them achieve their goals no matter where they are in their journey. Bill, it is such a pleasure to chat with you today. We're going to talk about everything DSOs, which is a really interesting space now. It's constantly experiencing an evolution alongside the dental industry as private practices think of merging with other practices or even acquiring existing practices, or even as multi-location practices think of what comes next. So we're really happy to have you join us and provide insights into this incredibly ever-changing industry. So let's start off with a glimpse into the world of DSOs. What does the current state of group practices look like, and what are some of the challenges that you see that they're facing?
Well, first off, thank you, Stacy and Patterson Dental for having me on the podcast. It's exciting to talk about, you know, the DSO and emerging dental group space. And you're right, Stacy, it is it's evolving pretty quickly and probably ways that I wouldn't have predicted, you know, when we started the publication 10 years ago. I think we all thought that it would have been a lot of large DSOs out there and maybe not as many solo practices. And, you know, we certainly have had a lot of consolidation, but it probably hasn't consolidated in the way that a lot of people envisioned, and I certainly wouldn't have. So I'll talk a little bit about what the market looks like. And it is kind of confusing because everybody categorizes DSOs differently. So I'll try and make it as understandable as possible. Let's get into a little bit about, you know, just maybe how much of the market is consolidated. And that really depends on who you ask. So the ADA has a set of numbers, and then the ADSO, which is the Association for Dental Support Organizations, has a different set of numbers. But I'd say in general, we're looking at multi-site, which can mean three locations up to Heartland or Pacific, right? The really big DSOs, probably somewhere in the about 30% consolidated range, meaning 30% of the market is some type of multi-site entity. And of course, you know, 1,800 locations, there's a big difference. So if we break that down a little bit more, you look at those national DSOs or the elites, there are about 40 of those platforms in the U.S. I would say the next level down are regional, or we might call them mid-markets. And that is, gosh, I guess anywhere from about 10 to 99 locations. We're somewhere about 400 of those entities. And then the smaller, but still what we would consider multi-site or, you know, DSO, 3 to 9 locations, we would consider those private group practice or emerging group, or about 1,800 of those entities. So that's kind of what the market looks like right now, 1,800 of the emerging groups, 400 of those regionals, and about 40 of those really big, big national DSOs. You know, there are some challenges out there that, you know, the DSOs are facing, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. So as far as challenges go, and I don't think the challenges are just DSO related. I think the challenges are also challenges that the dental industry, whether you're, you know, a solo or maybe a larger single practice are seeing. The challenges are pretty much identical. We did a procurement survey last year. I think we had 53 DSOs that we surveyed in this procurement survey. And one of the questions happened to be, you know, what are some of the challenges that you're experiencing? And number one was economic pressures. Talk a lot about inflation, the cost of everything going up, whether it's human capital or whether it's products and services. That was the number one challenge DSO stated they had, just the cost of things going up. Second, which was pretty surprising, was recruitment and retention. It's still a huge, huge issue. So whether it's, you know, holding on to clinicians or office staff or just, you know, getting hygienists, you know, you've got two things going on there. One is the cost of hiring people and keeping people on, but it's just actually finding people to work is still a big challenge. So I would say that, you know, that the cost, you know, inflation and then recruitment and retention being challenges. I would add into that that one thing we're seeing now is the economy being, you know, a little bit unsteady and treatment acceptance maybe down a bit. Recall is down. You're not getting patients to come back or having to work harder to get those patients back. So I'd say those are some of the challenges that we're seeing.
So, Bill, you mentioned a lot attached to cost and economic factors, especially in that labor market where it's challenging to find people to work, which I think is probably not a dental industry issue. It's just a corporate issue. It's just an issue that everybody seems to be facing. Can you dive a little bit deeper into what some of those economic challenges? I know this might be obvious, but just dive a little bit deeper into what those economic issues are causing as far as challenges around growth for DSOs, that they may not be as growing as quickly as they have. Is it due mostly to some of those economic challenges? Is it due some to being cautious that more economic challenges may present themselves? What's really that catalyst for slowing down the growth that maybe DSOs had experienced a little bit more rapidly in the past?
Yeah, this is a great question, Stacey. And I think it's maybe a little bit complicated. So sure. I'll preface this answer by saying that I think the market is still consolidating at a good clip, meaning that, you know, fewer dentists are owning a single practice and working by themselves, or the solo practitioners are not as prevalent as they once were. And there's a trend away from that, right? There's a trend away from a dentist working by themselves, and I kind of think on an island by themselves, and working in a model or a scenario where they're in a more collaborative environment. So they could be working in still a single location, but it's a much larger location with multiple dentists working, or in a small private group practice setting. You'll hear me talk a lot about that, the emerging groups, and I think the opportunity there, and that's where I see the growth. But kind of back to your point, that I think there is a slowdown with the larger DSOs, and there's a really good company, investment banking firm called DC Advisory, and they have this really interesting chart, and be happy to share it with any of the anybody in the audience if they want any of the data that I'm referencing. I'd be happy to, you know, share that, and I'm sure you'll be able to provide my contact info at the end. But so the top private equity backed DSOs, which are about 150 private equity backed DSOs, from 2021 to 2022 grew by practice count. So this is the number of practices. They grew from 21 to 22 by 23%. So pretty good growth.
Yeah, for sure.
From 22 to 23, they grew by 12%. And then from 23 to 24, they grew by 4%. So we had incredible growth from 22 to 23, pretty good growth from 22 to 20, or from 21 to 22, from 22 to 23, pretty good growth. And then from 23 to 24, it was relatively flat, 4% growth. So we've seen this really big slowdown. And to that initial question, a lot of that had to do with just the cost of capital. A lot of these large groups were growing through acquisition. They had big business development teams. They were going out there and buying up a bunch of practices. And in a lot of cases, they maybe were overpaying for some practices because money was cheap. And then as the interest rates started to grow, right, to climb, they realized that maybe they had purchased some practices they shouldn't have. They've overextended themselves. Their private equity backers told them to, hey, slow down here, and we have to digest everything that we've acquired over the past couple of years. So I think a lot of that was just a ton of acquisitional growth. And that has really slowed down and in a lot of cases has stopped completely with a lot of these DSOs. And the focus has gone away from acquisitional growth to focused on organic growth and or what you would call same store sales, right? Hey, let's look at what we own now at each individual location. And are we maximizing, you know, treatment acceptance? Do we have enough patients coming through the door? Are we adding multi-specialty? So that's really where the growth or the focus in growth is now at the practice level. And then I also mentioned private group practice. That's where I really see the continued growth, where these doctor entrepreneurs, the individual dentists are adding a practice or two or three and really scaling up. And I think, you know, both things are exciting. The focus on organic growth is very exciting. There's an opportunity there. And there's an opportunity, I think, for entrepreneurial dentists to really grow practices or multi-site or DSOs, whatever you want to call them, on their own.
So I want to go back to something you said about acquisitional growth. And just in your opinion, why do you think there's been a reduction in that acquisitional growth versus organic same store growth? Is there something trending that kind of alludes you to think there's a reason why, or is it just something that maybe because of that economic environment, maybe applying a little bit more caution if you say they were like PE backed, as you mentioned earlier, just, you know, exercising a little bit more care to say, let's not acquire everything at one time. Let's just take it a little bit more slowly.
Well, some of it is, it's just interest rates have gone up. So they don't have the capital to invest in buying practices. No, so that would be the number one reason. Number two, I think, would be that a lot of the really, so DSOs typically have a profile that they look at. And a lot of them tend to look at the same types of practices out there. Most DSOs aren't buying fixer-upper practices. They are buying well-run practices that are in certain markets in a lot of cases with, I'll give you a profile. Here's a typical profile. It's not what all DSOs look at, but in general, they're looking at $1.5 million in production minimum, maybe a little bit under that sometimes, a minimum of 5 operatories, like more of typically 8. And they want a doctor to stay on for at least 3 to 5 years. So you kind of, when you look at just those three, you know, the 3 to 5 years, doctor profile, the number of operatories and the production, probably really limits the number of practices that are even appealing to a DSO. So that's another thing. A lot of those types of practices were already acquired, right, in that past, you know, the heyday, right? 3 or 4 years ago when interest rates were lower. And then the other thing is, not to say that there still aren't a lot of those practices out there, but a lot of the good I put this in quotes, the good practices were acquired. So now we've got the entrepreneurial dentists that are out there now growing their practices. and a lot of them saw some of the valuations, some of the deals that were done, you know, 2, 3, or 4 years ago. Well, those practice valuations aren't out there anymore. These DSOs aren't necessarily paying peak value for practices anymore. Some are, but fewer are. So I think a lot of those docs that have those quality practices are like, you know what, I'm just going to do this on my own. Maybe it'll come back where, you know, I'll get to the point where I can sell it at another time when valuations are higher, or, you know what, I'm good doing this on my own. I kind of like to do it on my own. So it's a lot of different things, but number one would be that the inflation, interest rates.
Well, and it sounds too like that growth also needs to be powered by strategic decisions and a growth strategy and plan. So share with us what some of those strategic decisions doctors should be looking to make if they're looking to add practices, whether that's, you know, acquisitional growth or maybe not add practices so much, but same store growth, but especially around whether they want to acquire or build from the ground up. What are some of those strategic decisions they should be thinking about top of mind, no matter how they want to look into an expansion process?
So if we're talking about, you know, dentists, I think you really have to understand your skill set, you know, so we know you're a clinician, you're probably a great clinician. I think, you know, we know that some dentists maybe aren't the best business people, some are. So I think understanding your own skill set as an entrepreneur and a business owner would be something to really consider to make sure that, you know, you're set up for success. And if you're not, and we'll talk about this hopefully later on in the podcast, there are a ton of resources out there that really weren't available until recently. So you can leverage these resources that really haven't existed up until the past couple of years ago. But I would say, you know, understand your skill set or your limitations. If we focus a little bit on that point around, you know, de novo or building from the ground up versus acquisition, it's a big difference. So we'll talk a little bit of some DSOs like Pacific Dental, Aspen, Rodeo Dental, or DECA are really good at de novo. Like, they've got that figured out, and they also have the right people in place really to, you know, pick out a retail site, understand lease negotiation, know how to really build de novos from the ground up. And then others like a Guardian Dentistry or MB2 are really good at the acquisition model. They know how to go out and find the right doctors to partner with and the right practices to partner with. And then others still have hybrids where like a Heartland now will do a little bit of de novo, and then he'll also do a little bit of acquisition. So a little bit on the acquisition side, I'll dig a little deeper there if that's okay. With an acquisition model, the benefits there as you're kind of deciding, hey, where do I go? Do I do acquisition? Do I do de novo? With acquisition, you get immediate cash flow, right? You've got a practice that has patients and cash flow. You also have an existing doctor partner there. Remember, you want them to stay on for at least 3 to 5 years. That would be ideal. So you've got a doc that's going to stay on and run that practice, so you don't have to run it yourself or find staff. You've got their staff as well. So challenges with that model. So those are some of the benefits, right? You've got cash flow, you've got the doctor, you've got the staff. Some of the challenges is you may have a different practice management system at the practice that you're acquiring than the one that you have now. The systems may be different, so you have to figure out a way really to start to integrate. And I think integration early on is key. You don't want to wait and have 3 or 4 or 5 locations and then figure out, oh gosh, okay, now we've got to get everybody on one practice management system. You know, everybody needs to be brought over to Eaglesoft. We want them using the same analytics platform. You want to try and do it early on. So that's one of the negatives. You're going to be buying, in a lot of cases, practices that are using different things. And you want to, and also you've got staff that's used to using those. So they may really be happy using a different practice management system. So to move them off is a challenge. And then another thing is you're really acquiring a different culture. So you really have to look at that acquisitional practice, that practice that you might buy, and say, hey, are they, do they think like us? Can they fit into our culture? So I think those are some of the challenges there. Now, with de novo, you don't have the integration issues. You don't have the staff issues, but you do, right? Because you don't have a staff, you have to hire them.
Yeah, that's true.
So you have to do all that. You have to find a dentist. You have to choose a site. So that, you know, that's a totally different skill set. But if you can figure out de novo, you're also not bringing in bad habits or people that are, you know, want to use a different practice management system. You know, you can say, hey, this is the, we're going to do everything identical in every single location. And if you can figure that out, then it's probably a lot easier. But, you know, it's totally different. You also don't have any patience with de novo either, right? So you've got to go out there and market.
That's true. There's the business aspect, which, I mean, I think we're not really going to spend a ton of time talking about today, but the marketing, the communication side of things, you know, to attract those new patients in, because it's would be like opening a store and the doors are unlocked, but there's no one standing there. There's no patient schedule. There's no, no nothing really happening. You got to go find them. I appreciate you, pacing those two things out for us. I think it's, you hear the two words and you know that they're very different, but to have you shed some light on what makes them so different. In my mind, you were talking and I'm seeing very different Excel spreadsheets with plans and tasks and resources and timelines attached to each, both that are probably miles long, but are both very different at the same time. So thank you for taking the time to do that. That was really helpful.
Sure. And I think that's why you see a lot of the, you know, the big boys or girls, right? The big DSOs, where they tend to focus on one or the other, and they're really good at that. There are some, again, that are kind of doing a hybrid, but you don't see a lot of that. I mean, normally they go, hey, we've kind of figured this out. We're really good at this. And they stay in that lane. And to your point about, you know, not having any patients, having to market and all in the business services that you'd need with that and the different spreadsheets that you'd have to put together. There are so many great resources out there to help you do that. We can touch on that a little later.
Yes,
in the
please
podcast,
do.
But just
now's a great time.
Huge opportunity, I think, for these dentists that are hungry to scale up, but maybe don't know where to start, or maybe have started to scale up a little bit and have realized that it's not quite as easy as maybe they thought it would be. But you know, it's a great time to be a dentist that's has an entrepreneurial mindset.
Yeah, and that's pretty unique too, right? You usually see one or the other, that entrepreneurial mindset, or they're incredibly talented at their craft and their art. So I mean, it's really kind of like the white whale when you find someone who has that entrepreneurial dentist spark. That's able to achieve their goals, but also provide, I think in the crux of everything is providing exemplary patient care. That's a non-negotiable.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So can you share some of those resources with us? I think now's a great time to, you know, provide some, whether they're websites or if they're certain, you know, journals or what have you, what would you recommend for those looking to grow, scale up, increase same store growth, or just, you know, kind of improve operations?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to talk through some of these resources. And I think, you know, to kind of step back a little bit is, you know, as you're thinking of adding a practice or two or three or wherever you're, you know, whatever that scaling looks like, or even maybe, you know, going from a small single practice to one larger practice with many dentists. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, we want it to be in one location, but we want it to be bigger. And I'm going to bring in a couple of associates here. We might do multi-specialty. It's a lot easier to manage one location than it is to manage multiple locations. So there's nothing wrong with a strategy like that. But I think, you know, the number one consideration is, you know, why are you even looking to do that? Is that, you know, a passion that you have? Is that, you know, are you maxed out in the current location that you have right now? Are you looking to bring multi-specialty in, or maybe you're looking there? Maybe there's a practice down the street that you might know the doctor might be retiring, and you think that could be, you know, that second practice that you're looking for. So really, it is, you know, the kind of the why behind that, and sure. Want to be an operator. And what I mean by that is, do you actually want to be the CEO or the, at this point, you're going to be everything, right? You're going to be the dentist, you're going to be the CEO, you're going to be the COO, you're going to be doing a lot of that. So do you actually want to do that? So, you know, is there that really that desire to do that? So I think that's kind of what you need to really consider. And the reason I kind of bring all this up, and I don't want to dissuade anybody, because I think it's a great time to be an entrepreneurial dentist. And we'll talk, because a lot of it has to do with just the resources available. But I think you also have to realize that you're going to need to have, you know, if you're going to have multiple locations, you're going to need to have multiple clinicians. You may be able to, as a solo, add a practice and be able to hop between locations for a while, have an associate at one. But I think you're going to have to really kind of think about, you know, bringing a doctor partner, somebody in somebody that can be truly a partner and multiple partners. So, you know, those are just some things to consider. GroupDentistryNow.com is our website. There's an article, and the reason I kind of talk about all this is we had a Dr. Kartik Antani. Kartik is his first name, and Kartik had three locations in New Mexico. And he wrote an article for us where he literally went from three locations back down to one. And the title of his article was "Why Scaling Down May Lead to Greater Growth for Emerging Dental Groups." And I think he grew too quickly, and he talks about that story. So sometimes, you know, bigger isn't always better.
Yeah,
it's
that's
a lot
true.
Of it is really being mindful of the way you scale and not necessarily doing it just because, oh, you know, I want to have three practices so I can say I have three practices. We hear a lot of that at the DSO meetings. You know, DSOs will be like, well, how many locations do you have? Well, how many locations do you have? And what we never really hear is, well, yeah, you know, I've got seven locations, but only four of them are profitable. The other three are awful. So, you know, those are the kinds of conversations we don't have. But, you know, again, saying that, you know, as a preference to saying, hey, now we've got all these, you know, resources out there. And I would say 10 to 15 years ago, you'd really have to figure it all out on your own. And I give a lot of credit to Steve Thorne at Pacific Dental and Rick Workman at Heartland and Steve Build at Smile Brands, all these DSOs that started 20 or 30 years ago. There was no blueprint. They just kind of went around blindly, and all of a sudden, you know, they've created these massive DSOs and have done just incredible jobs, and they all look different, but yet they're all still very, very successful. So now we've got resources. I mentioned our resource. We've got a couple thousand articles, groupdentistrynow.com, 215 odd podcasts, a bunch of webinars. We've got a weekly newsletter. It's all free. So that's great, right? Free is good. So I would say we'd be a great resource. There are also a lot of other options out there. There are practice management consultants, but they are group practice management consultants. They're focused on helping dentists scale up. So that's all they do. There's an organization called Aligned. So that's like Align, but ED, Aligned Dental Partners. They do a great job, and they work with a lot of doctors that are adding practices, and they help out whether it comes to HR, setting up legal structures, helping on the operation side, you name it. They do a great job. Besides Align, there's Expo Dental, which is big X, P-O, Expo Dental. There's SkyTale Advisors, so SkyTale, T-A-L-E. They're another one that does. So there's three that I know. There's others out there, but those three come to mind: Aligned, Expo Dental, and SkyTale. You can really leverage some of the systems that they've built out, and they can help you as you scale up. But you don't even necessarily need to go that route, Stacy. I will toot Patterson's horn here and say that, you know, Patterson has really built out a super strong strategic accounts team that has a ton of knowledge, because they work with a lot of these DSOs that have been there, done that. They work with them on a daily basis. And, you know, you can really leverage, you know, the strategic accounts team, or even the, your Patterson territory manager, because, you know, I was at your national sales meeting, Stacy, and you've really invested a lot of time and money in preparing the territory managers, educating them, giving them, you know, the resources to really help out Dennis as they scale up. And you've also got your Navigate for DSO vendor partners, and you can leverage these vendors out there. So I think really the easiest thing to do is just reach out to your Patterson rep and start asking them questions. They'll point you in the right direction.
Well, that's so nice of you to bring Patterson into the mix. Thank you for saying that. I think you said something that I want to touch on briefly, that our territory reps, our strategic accounts reps, they do have such a level of expertise in providing those solutions. I think, you know, and you mentioned Dr. Kartik was scaling down. So, I mean, that's, again, not something we always hear about, but something that he knows what his why is. He wanted to scale back. Just to have three doesn't mean that those three are operating, three locations are operating correctly. But our reps know how to help navigate some of those strange conversations, like, hey, maybe I want to scale back. Or on the flip side, the ones they're used to hearing is, we want to add more. So, I mean, I think there's just, it seems to, no matter where you're sitting in this industry, that being able to truly show up and listen and to say to the dentist, the front and back office staff, the leadership team, we understand you, like, and truly understand where your challenges lie, where your unique needs might be. Most importantly, what goals do you want to achieve? Not just to say you achieve them, but just to continue on a sustainable path to growth, so that you aren't doing a growing exponentially exercise only to fall exponentially. Because I think that's the cycle of things. When you grow that explosively, where else do you go? You know, it's kind of like a firework. Once it hits the top and it explodes, it's beautiful, but where does it go? And I think our teams do a really beautiful job of making sure that that growth is consistent, sustainable, and has a really healthy trajectory. So shameless plug for Patterson on that one. So thank you for bringing that up. I do appreciate it. And, you know, it's nice to be able to have somebody who is your true partner and to say, we show up and we hear you and we're here to help you no matter where you're at, whether you're looking to build, grow, optimize, you like where you're at, you're sustaining your practice. It's all fair game, and it's all on the table for that customized solution. So I want to bring up the topic of technology. And you mentioned earlier about early integration, and a lot of DSOs who are managing, maybe doing that acquisitional type growth, are inheriting some systems that maybe not the best, or they don't integrate with one another, or with the home office. It's just saying, you know, all of these things are so disparate, they're not talking to each other. I want to talk quickly on the topic of tech. What trends do you see that are being implemented or integrated early when DSOs are looking to either do that acquisitional or de novo growth? Or on the flip side, what do you see as actually kind of being tossed aside that used to be something that was important, but maybe kind of lost its sea legs and its strength a little bit?
Yeah, it's, I mean, everything's technology now, right? It's in everything. Everything's technology, everything's AI. I think there's a big focus on technology solutions from, you know, patient communication side of things. So we see a lot of things wrapped around recall, you know, texting the patients, having that type of communication with the patient, you know, whether it's not just, you know, the traditional phone call or the, you know, the mailed reminders now, you know, it's a lot more sophisticated. So, you know, patient communication solutions, I think, are, you know, still really, really prevalent out there, you know, whether it's something like a Max Assist or a Weave, you know, that those kind of solutions that exist. I think on the clinical side of things, and then we can talk about AI, because that's almost like a whole different, I mean, I know AI is in everything, but there are some AIs, I think, that are stand out. And I think we see a lot of interest in in-office 3D printing, you know, whether it's aligners, mouth guards, crowns, you know, even in dentures, you know, there's a lot of talk about that. Or even simply, you know, digital scanning, you know, that is really popular, where they're doing digital scanning in office, and then they're sending it out for digitally for the lab to make the restoration. So that is, I would say that, you know, patient communication, printing, scanning are really, really important. As you know, another technology that we don't necessarily think about, but is super, super important and really affects everybody, cybersecurity. You know, so like how prepared are you when it comes to cybersecurity? And it's and we read about these breaches and hacks every day. I mean, we have an article that we or a column that we do called Cyber Watch every single month, where we highlight strategies, but then also just issues that happen in healthcare, and you know, quite a few, and they're hugely impactful. I think you work with DDS Rescue as one of your partners, and there's Black Talent Security. So there are, you know, vendors out there that can really help out when it comes to cybersecurity.
Yeah, and that's not something, I mean, I know when I go into my dentist, I don't necessarily think about that when I walk in there, that they could have an issue on that cybersecurity front. You know, you just, it's your dentist. You go, you get your, you know, twice yearly cleaning, your checkup. And if you ever have to have a crown or root canal, I think no one will escape this life without some horror story of an almond or a candy cane. I may be speaking from experience on the candy cane part, but you just don't necessarily put two and two together that dental practices, especially the more that you have, are sensitive to those kind of security attacks. And there's patient information that's very highly sensitive that's stored in those machines on a very regular basis. Yeah. So let's talk about AI. So this has been the topic that I wanted to talk to you about. And I think it's where we've been going this entire time together. So let's talk about how AI is impacting, first of all, the dental industry. And if there's any kind of confusion that's popping up around what those different AI options might mean. Are they safe? Are they legit? What's your thought process on AI in dentistry?
Yep. So it's definitely the year, or maybe the decade of AI for sure. And yeah, I think we kind of look at it in the order of adoption. You know, what's seems to be, and it's probably also what was first to market when it comes to AI, and it's really diagnostic AI. So kind of evaluating, you know, the X-rays that come in, right, and looking at those, you know, solutions like Overjet and Pearl and Vidya Health and solutions like that. That seems to be, you know, something that is been around for now 3-4 years. So it's proven. You've got this library that they are able to leverage millions of these X-rays and look at the outcomes and really predict, you know, based on what the X-ray looks like, you know, how to really diagnose that. It's a great training tool. It's a great patient engagement tool. It's to get treatment acceptance. You can show the patient. Some of these solutions really do a great job. So I think, you know, diagnostic AI would be something that if you aren't looking at it currently, you should be. I think the adoption rate right now, I reached out to somebody at one of the big diagnostic AI companies, and they're saying with DSOs, about 40% of DSOs are using some type of diagnostic AI today. In private practice, it's only about 15%. So the DSOs have really adopted diagnostic AI a lot quicker than private practice has, for sure. So I would say that's kind of the number one thing to look at. I would say, hey, it's proven, it's out there, it's not going anywhere. It's only going to become more and more important and become, you know, standard of care.
Yeah. Why do you think DSOs have a higher adoption rate than private practice?
Well, I think a lot of them looked at it as really a way to help mentor and also check really the work of their clinicians. So, you know, you've got a lot of younger dentists out there that can almost use it as a, you know, a backstop to kind of confirm, hopefully, you know, what they were going to already diagnose. But it's just, you know, almost like a, you know, second look at something, right? You have that, you know, doctor come in and, you know, hey, I'd like somebody else to come in and take a look at this. And with diagnostic AI, they can do that. It's also a great training tool.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we talk about it in, you know, the space when it comes to, you know, creating content or, you know, even graphic designers talk about it. And everybody has that AI option in whatever industry they work in. And what are those implications? And I mean, I've experienced it a little bit. I'll tell you, it makes me a little nervous sometimes, but in what I've used it for, it's pretty spot on. I mean, and people can have a very polarizing view of that statement, but it's been a learning experience. But it also, I think, you know, we think about it in the terms of faster diagnostics, that only increases that patient care we talked about earlier. It engages them in the process. And I think it makes it's faster. I mean, face it, nobody wants to go to the dentist to have a crown and get a temp, which I know still very much happens. Not a lot of, single visit sometimes with crowns, depending on where you're at or what your dentist practice, but to know that you may not have to be in a level of discomfort for very long. I think there's a little bit of peace of mind, as well as intrigue attached to how AI can help make that time in the chair a little bit easier and more comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been really eye-opening to see how quickly that type of diagnostic AI has been adopted in the DSO space. And I'm sure we'll see, you know, the general dentist population, the solo practitioners, adopt it pretty quickly as they realize the benefit to it. And I would say next, to move away from diagnostic AI, I think is something called what we would call conversational AI. And mm-hmm. This is something that's a little bit newer. I mean, there's some companies that have been around quite a while, like Patient Prism and PeerLogic, that are, you know, conversational AI kind of is this relatively it's an overarching term. So it describes a lot of different things. And, you know, one would be front desk is answering the phone. PeerLogic or a Patient Prism is actually monitoring that call to listen how that front desk person is handling that call. Did they ask the right questions? You know, what could they have done differently? You know, that, so, you know, there's that assistance, you know, with those inbound and sometimes even monitoring outbound calls. So the follow-up calls, how were those handled? And then there's a layer of AI on top of it. Then there's the other AI, which is I'm calling as a patient and AI is answering the phone. It's not a person. It's actually AI. And so maybe the front desk person is at lunch or it's after hours or maybe in some cases, not many yet, but maybe in the future, AI just answers the phone. And they've become pretty sophisticated. They can actually, in some cases, book appointments. They can verify some types of insurances or do, you know, hey, do you accept this insurance? Yes, we do. So there, you know, there is that type of conversational AI that exists out there as well. So it's, I would say that, you know, that some of that, the AI that's actually answering the calls, that's relatively new, but it's becoming more and more prevalent.
That's really interesting. I mean, you always think when you call, you're going to get a real live human being on the other end of that phone, especially, like you said, nobody really wants to go to the dentist. And when they offer the going, they want to talk to somebody because they have a concern. So it's interesting. I read an article not that long ago about humanizing AI and making it more, I can't remember the term that they use, but it felt more like speaking to a friend. And it felt more, not just conversational, but more emotive, I guess, and how the future of AI is becoming and looking into that psychological impact of, you know, kind of having a buddy in your phone. And it was really interesting on how, you know, just being able to have that accessibility to talk to somebody, air quotes, like you said earlier, about something that might be going on that's bothering you, or you need to, you know, some directions or tips on gardening or whatever the topic might be, that it would be like speaking to a friend. So, I mean, it was equally interesting and kind of strange because you think, like, is nobody going to be friends with anybody at some point in the future, that we're all just going to be, you know, technology buddies, even more so than I think the world probably already is. So I think we'll definitely keep our eyes open and our ears open about, you know, what that conversational AI does, especially in an industry that's just always evolving. There's always something, and it should be always evolving based on the technology. So I want to flip this just real quick on from going from AI to the impact of having a human being from a support perspective. So from your standpoint, I think there's been some topics surfaced in this space around the value of an account manager or a sales rep, especially in that multi-location or group practice space when there's a lot going on, a lot of air traffic, if you will, as far as, you know, trying to get growth plans nailed down and trying to get all these tasks accomplished while keeping these, you know, end goals and things they want to achieve in mind. So from your perspective, what is that importance of having that single point of contact, whatever that role might be, especially when it comes to that support during the early integration or even, you know, farther into the life cycle of a DSO and they just need assistance? But what is that importance and how do you feel about just having that constant single point of contact? What does that mean to a DSO and how should they leverage it if they don't leverage it today?
Yeah, I mean, it really ties into what I said earlier about the investment that Patterson's made in their people. And, I come from the manufacturing side of the industry. So mm-hmm. I worked quite a bit with Patterson salespeople and different distribution partners out there. And to have one point of contact when you are as a dental practice using probably hundreds of products from hundreds of different companies just makes so much sense, because inevitably there's going to be, you know, whether you're a single practice or an emerging group or even a large DSO, you're going to have equipment issues. Equipment's going to go down. You're going to have service sure. issues. You're going to have issues with products inevitably. You know, there's going to be something that happens, whether it's, you know, a technique question or whether it's a, you know, an issue with a certain product. And just having a point person, somebody that you can go to that can help either handle that issue or get it resolved. I mean, just it always just amazed me. You know, you kind of look at the percent of production that's actually spent on supplies, which I think is like 5-7% or somewhere around there. It's relatively small. And yet there's such a focus on how do we reduce that cost? How do we reduce that? And I guess the only reason somebody might not want to have a person, a point of contact would be to maybe somehow get some type of price reduction. I don't see you saving money. I mean, I think in the long run, you know, the time that it would take for somebody at your DSO to get the, you know, instead of having that point person at Patterson that they can go to say, hey, we're having this issue, help us out. They handle it versus going, okay, who do we buy this from? Who's my contact there? How are they going to resolve this? I would rather have one point of contact. And so on top of that, that's, you know, just the issues that inevitably happen every day in a practice that I think sometimes the DSO doesn't necessarily think about. But what are the problems that are happening at the practice level that impact the doctor, the office staff, you know, the other clinical staff that you might not be aware of, but you need that point person to help out with? So that's at the practice level. But then also from a strategy perspective, you know, now that, you know, the Patterson team really is a resource to help with private group practices and larger DSOs that they scale up, I don't know why you would not want to have that resource there.
Well, I think we've come full circle because we certainly started talking about costs at the very beginning. And I think you brought up a good point about just having someone to pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm concerned about costs. How can you help me, you know, navigate some of that heartburn that I'm feeling? And if we're doing the best we can, then it's great confirmation. But if there's something we can do to make it better, let's talk. So good full circle moment. I don't know if you planned that, but that was really excellent. But mm-hmm. So one last question for you before we go, and it's my favorite question to ask. And it's, if you had a crystal ball, what does the future of DSOs look like in the next decade?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I think we're going to continue to see consolidation. I think, you know, if interest rates continue to stay where they are, elevated or higher than I think, you know, private equity and a lot of the industry would like to see, I think we're going to see a lot more growth when it comes to these private group practices, these dentist entrepreneurs. We're going to continue to see solo practitioners. That segment's going to continue to shrink for sure. It doesn't mean they're all selling to a DSO. It certainly does not mean that. It just means that I think the dentist is going to be a much more sophisticated business owner. They're going to either have multi-location or they're going to have much bigger practices with more dentists or more working in one larger location for sure. I also think that you're going to see consolidation at the top. So we're going to see what I mean by that is bigger DSOs buying other big DSOs. And inevitably, we're probably going to see somebody go public because they're just not going to have another private equity investor. We do have one publicly traded DSO in Canada right now, Dental Corp. So that does exist already. I think we've got a couple in Australia and maybe a couple in, others in the Asia Pacific area. But I do think we will see at least one DSO in the next, I'd say, 3 to 4 years that will become publicly traded and probably even, an international DSO, somebody that maybe will cross borders.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for that because that's an interest. That's a whole other podcast topic in and of itself, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting times. And I think, my message to the audience would be if you're a dentist that's looking at a practice or two or three at scale up, you've got so many great resources that exist out there, people that can help you, people that can help out on the business side of things. If you don't feel 100% confident, tell you, when to add an operations person or a finance person, or, can I step into a CEO role and get out of the chair, as some dentists like to do? Can I do both? I mean, there are resources out there. Patterson, of course, you're building the resources in-house too, where you can offer those up. So it's a great time, I think, to be a dentist and to be an entrepreneurial dentist.
Yeah, it's you're not alone when you're trying to figure out what the next step of the plan is. And I think a lot of us assume we need to, walk that path alone, which you do not. So, Bill, I want to thank you so much for your time and expertise and insights today. It was truly wonderful to get a very small glimpse into your large brain about DSOs and kind of what's coming next.
Yeah, thank you, Stacey. I appreciate the opportunity. Great talking to you. Great questions. And thank you, Patterson, for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of learning happened today, and I'm guessing there are a lot of folks out there listening, wondering where they can learn more from you after this episode. So as Bill mentioned earlier, if you're interested in taking in more of his research and knowledge, you can visit www.groupdentistrynow.com and be sure to sign up for their DSO weekly newsletter, which is free and can be found under About Us tab on the homepage. So thank you guys for listening. We look forward to talking to you again about the DSO space and what's coming next.
Thanks for listening to the Patterson Dental Podcast. That concludes this episode of the Strategic Accounts Takeover with guest host Stacey Papp. Tune in next time.